have a child who's in middle school. If you do, you might have noticed they're going through a lot of changes. Changes that can cause confusion and even conflict for kids and their parents. Well, school counsellor Phyllis Fagel is here to help. Phyllis is the author of Middle School Matters, and she's just published Middle School Superpowers. The book has tips and strategies to aid parents and teachers guiding kids through the often rough waters of middle school. She joins me now. Phyllis, hi.
Hi.
So tweens, Phyllis, we're talking like 11 to 14-year-olds, kind of crazy age. And I can say that because we just landed right in it with my 12-year-old. So set the stage for us by explaining just where middle schoolers are at in terms of their brain development and puberty.
So it's such an interesting age because they can have that little kid in them or they can be incredibly sophisticated within the same hour.
Mm-hmm.
And relating to them requires treating them as if they're a little bit older and more sophisticated than they are because they so desperately want to be seen as capable and competent because they're so insecure. I love this age. I think they're the funniest humans on the planet, and they have such a desire to change the world for the better.
Mm, I love it. That's a really great positive spin on it. So let's dive in a bit because, you know, these are kids who left elementary school. Maybe they're in a K-8, but most of them leave elementary school and they seem to turn from that sweet, generally compliant little kid into, I mean, well, kids who are suddenly confronting more complex social relationships. And you've seen this in your years as a counselor, and I'm wondering why. What changes on the social level for them once they leave elementary school?
There are several things that change. One is just that uprooting that you're talking about. They suddenly find themselves in a much more complex academic and social environment. They go from one homeroom teacher to maybe seven teachers. Maybe they are in a building where they don't know anybody by name or they are not sure where they fit in. And this is a time when they so desperately want to fit in. They are acutely aware of how well or how not well, depending on how they feel about themselves, they fit in with others.
Yeah. And you have lots of advice in your book for parents who find themselves in the middle of this complicated age group. You say it's possible to build resilient kids. So I want you to tell me what attributes you consider a resilient tween to have.
A tween, by definition, has very little life experience or perspective, and they're so exquisitely sensitive. So it's very easy for them to experience one setback and think that it's all doom and gloom, that if one friend drops them, they'll never have friends again. If they do poorly on one math quiz, they'll never be good at math. And so resilience in this age group is really about helping them continue to take risks at a time when they're so vulnerable and insecure, helping them recover from disappointment, helping them retain optimism, helping them see setbacks as temporary and situational instead of more permanent, instead of seeing them as obstacles that can defeat them.
Gosh, I feel like that's kind of life advice for all of us. But I love the idea of superpowers, though, Phyllis. I'm going to be honest with you. If I told my tween who suddenly got too cool for school about super belonging or super healing powers, I can just see him rolling his eyes at me. But Phyllis, I'm not rolling my eyes. I want my tween to have all these superpowers. So talk to me about the idea of tweens and superpowers.
So first of all, I get it. I have three kids and my youngest didn't finish middle school all that long ago. So I really understand that. But no kid does better because they think they're lacking or they think the stakes are high. They really do need us to tap into their strengths, which really are what I'm talking about when I use the term superpowers. We need to figure out what it is that makes them tick and really use those strengths to help them work on the areas where they might need more skill development.
I want to get you to, you know, flesh this out for us. So I'm going to just pick on a couple of the superpowers
Sure. In
your book. Tell me about super security, the power to build pride in your identity and step into someone else's shoes.
So anything that makes you stand out as different in this age group is something that kids fear. And that might be neurodiversity. It could be related to their sexuality or their gender identity. It could be that their parents are divorced. It could be that they're struggling economically or their family is experiencing economic hardship. It really can show up in so many different ways. And so when I write about super security, I'm really putting everything under that umbrella of identity because we want to make sure that kids are comfortable in who they are. We know that kids who not only are able to embrace difference in others, but also able to really be self-aware and appreciate what makes them different are not only kinder, but they're also much less likely to tolerate abuse from anybody.
And then there's super belonging, the power to find your place and make strong connections. You know, why is it so hard for tweens to do this? And what can adults do to help?
One of the first things I do with new middle schoolers is normalize that every single one of them is going to get dumped by a friend. Because this is the age when kids are figuring out how to choose a friend, how to be a friend, and they're at wildly different levels of sophistication. You can have one kid who's still playing with Barbies and another kid who is ranking their crushes and wearing makeup, and that can create a lot of friendship instability. When adults think about middle school, they think about the times that they were hurt socially, and sometimes we bring that to the table, but it doesn't really do kids a service when we do that because they'll have a gentler experience if we very matter-of-factly let them know they will experience some social bumps, but that that's part of the phase.
Yeah, and that kind of ties into this other one, super vulnerability, the power to know when and how to ask for help. And I feel like that gets to the heart of the fact that they kind of think they know everything and adults or their parents now are at a very arm's length, if not kind of the enemy.
They need their parents and other adults as much, if not more, than they did when they were younger. It's just that we have to get in there and parent them and coach them much differently. One of the things that sets younger teens apart from older teens is that they are much less in touch with their inner life. They're much less likely to know when they need to ask for help, let alone to know whom they need to ask for help. And so we need to be defining the difference between the mood fluctuations of puberty versus depression and anxiety. And we really need to be reinforcing that when they do need support, they need to go to an adult instead of a similarly impaired same age friend.
And if you're seeing some of those signs of kind of they seem down, maybe it's anxiety, maybe it's depression, you know, is that something that you should really step in and intervene and try and get them some tools to deal with it?
Yes. And one of the things I talk about in the book is that it's not always mental health. And one of the most powerful things a parent can do is really start interviewing, almost be like a social anthropologist, talk to their coaches, to their teachers, to their school counselor, get to know their friends and their friends' parents so that you can start looking for clues that something is off. You know, maybe they're taking less interest in things they used to love, or maybe their grades are plummeting, or they're not sleeping enough, or they're sleeping too much. And then at that point, really initiate a conversation with your child about what might be going on. It may not even be related to depression or anxiety. It could be that they suffered a setback socially, or that they need to work on their social skills, or they're overwhelmed and need help with their executive functioning and staying organized.
I also love the advice midway through the book that you can convey to your tween that you respect them by asking their advice on, say, like a difficult situation you're having at work. What are some other ways parents can build trust and respect with their tween?
I love asking them for advice and also talking to them about things going on in the news, big events. Kids really do want to talk about that stuff. They're taking everything in, but so often we assume that they're not ready to have these more sophisticated conversations. But this is an age when they really can start to think about things more critically, more expansively. And anytime we give them a little emotional distance when we're talking about our own problems versus talking about theirs, they're much more likely to feel comfortable connecting rather than shutting down because they're so afraid that they'll disappoint us or that will judge them or they might feel criticized. And so it's really important that every chance we get, we're really reinforcing all the things we see in them as strengths. And one of the ways we can do that is exactly as you said, to ask them for advice or ask them to teach us something.
So I want to end, Phyllis, by putting you into a lightning round. I'm going to throw out some characteristics of tweens that kind of seem to develop overnight and throw parents for a loop. And I'd love to get your expert analysis of each and some quick advice for parents. You up for this?
I am.
Let's do it. Okay. Moody, or on the other end, giant mood swings.
If it's really extreme, it might be worth talking to the pediatrician. If it's just the gentle mood swings of puberty, check in with them. Don't hammer them to asking them over and over if anything is wrong, but just check in, ask them if they need a snack, see how they're doing.
Don't expect them to be happy all the time, right?
do not expect them to be happy. Do not expect anyone to be happy all the time.
Less family-oriented, totally peer-focused.
It's normal for them to want to pull away and spend time with their friends. The more we can validate that and tell them we understand and then come up with a mutually agreed upon plan for when we do have that family time. It's okay to say we do eat dinner as a family, or Sunday afternoon is when we go to visit a relative, but have those problem solving conversations together and you'll get better results.
Okay, monosyllabic answers to parental questions. How was school? Good.
I had that with my own child. I said, what did you do at school? He said, I had PE. I said, what did you do? He said, I ran. I said, can you expand on that? He said, around the track. So having a sense of humor is critical, and be willing to talk to them when they're ready to talk. It may not be exactly when you want to have that conversation. They might be exhausted after school, but later at night, they might suddenly have the energy to have deeper conversations.
Phyllis Fagel is a school counselor and author of Middle School Superpowers, Raising Resilient Tweens in Turbulent Times. Phyllis, thank you.
Thank you for having me.